Bible podcast. We hope you'll enjoy this message by Pastor Joey Bonifacio.
Hi, everybody. Pastor Josh back. Thank you so much for joining us on our online service. We've been running through the book of Matthew, and last week we talked about Jesus and his miracle power. We talked about how it says that he came down from a mountain, and a leper came up to him and said, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." And I love the fact that Jesus reaches out, touches him, and says, "Look, I am willing, be cleansed." Jesus is willing to enter in and help us in our place of need. He's willing to touch those difficult parts of our life. Now, we passed over a couple verses we want to revisit today to see how God calls others to be part of his team that reaches out to serve, love, and help those in need. So it says in the next verse, "See to it that you tell no one, go your way, show yourself to the priest, and offer the gift that Moses commanded as a testimony to them." Now, why I want to bring up this verse is one of the things Jesus is doing here is he's going to the religious leaders of the day and he's saying something new is happening. You need to see this, that the Old Testament talked about the fact that God's supernatural power would bring healing to lepers. There was a whole process of how that would work. And so now here's Jesus saying, it's happening again. We're seeing healing power flow. We're seeing new life happen, and you should be a part of it. Now, as people start hearing more about his miracles and hear more of his teaching, people get interested. And actually, one reaches out to him, and it's actually a scribe. That's the people who literally, they write down the Old Testament over and over and over again. So they become experts in the law because they're just repeating it and writing it over and over again. And he says, "I'll follow you wherever you go." So here's someone who, most of the other times in the Gospels, the scribes were people who ended up fighting against Jesus. They weren't really interested in his teaching. But here they're saying, "Yes, we're for you." This guy's saying, "I'm willing to follow you." Jesus has an interesting response. You know, a lot of times we're just so happy anybody shows up at church or shows up at our small group or is interested in the thing we're sharing. We're like, yeah, come on, come on. Jesus almost pushes this guy away. He says, "Foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his hand." What is he saying? He's saying, look, if you're going to follow me, it's going to cost you something. And Jesus at the very beginning makes it clear, if you're going to follow this Christian route, this following of Jesus route, difficult seasons might be ahead. I'm not promising you an easy life. I'm promising you a meaningful life. I'm promising you a value life, but I'm not promising you an easy life. He goes to another disciple. This is someone who's following him. Disciple means follower. This guy's already following him. "Hey, just let me go first and bury my father." Now, the implication here is most likely that the father has not passed away yet, but he's saying, "Let me wait for my father to pass, then I'll get my inheritance. Once I get my inheritance, that'll kind of take care of my financial future, then I'll come follow you." Jesus makes this pretty strong statement, "Follow me and let the dead bury their own dead." Wow, this is the gentle Jesus, this is the kind Jesus, this is the meek Jesus. He's making a very strong statement here, and I think there's a reason for that. To follow Jesus, and we're going to see this as we go on through some of the verses, you're going to have to face some trials. You're going to have to face some tribulations. If you get really serious about following Jesus, it's not always easy. And he's trying to help them on the front end to say this, look, if you're really into this thing, if you're really committed to this thing, you better be committed with everything because it's going to cost you something to follow me. So he goes on from there, and he sees a man named Matthew sitting at a tax office. Here's another time where Jesus is not doing things the way we'd expect him to. If I was looking for new followers and I was the Messiah, the God who's come to earth, I would probably go to the synagogue or to the temple or to the religious leaders or to anywhere other than the tax office. Honestly, I try to avoid the tax office at all costs in all countries at all times. I'm not really a big fan of the tax office. I don't think many people are. In this case, it's even more so because Matthew, as a tax collector, is receiving taxes for an oppressing people. The Roman Empire is oppressing currently Israel here, and he's collecting taxes from his own people on behalf of another people. That's why tax collectors were so hated. And he said to them, to Matthew, he says to him, "Follow me." So here's Jesus' call to him. Hey, this is your shot, but you got to get up and go. You got to leave that thing behind and come follow me. He arose and immediately followed. You know, sometimes I'm asked, why is it that people seem to only turn to Jesus when their life gets really tough, when they go through real problems, when they go through real despair? It seems like, is it just a crutch? Is it just something you turn to when you have nothing else? I think part of the answer is we're so prideful. We'll try everything to be our own boss, be our own God, be our own leader, be our own focus of our lives until we have nothing else. But here, Matthew sees something. Here is a guy who's really walking in the power of God, really walking in the love of God, and he's willing to call even a person like me who's turned his back on his own people, who's kind of been a sellout, who's got weak moral character in a lot of different ways. And Matthew's going, man, the guy offers me a chance. I'm getting up and going. The cool thing about Jesus is he's offering all those guys a chance. He shows up at Matthew's house that night. Let's have dinner. Many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with them. Now, you can imagine the religious people are just like, I cannot believe this. I used to tell this story of, I was walking down a hawker stall one day here in Singapore. We have like food court hawker stalls. And there was one of our pastors, Pastor Mark, and he's sitting at a table with an ashtray full of empty cigarettes. This guy, unbelievable, man. I have smoke coming up from the ashtray. I can't believe it. I walk on a little farther. There's Arnie with his wife, Anna, and they're sitting at a table. There's six empty beers right there, beer glass, just sitting on the table. So, of course, being a good pastor, I called some of my friends in the church, and I went, hey, you got to pray for these guys. You got to pray for Pastor Arnie. You got to pray for Pastor Mark. Look at them. They're doing these horrible things. They're smoking. They're drinking. And then I would ask people, who sinned in the story I just told? And the actual answer is just me. I gossiped about my friends. What I didn't know is Mark was sitting at a table someone else had been smoking at, and he was just holding the table for his future friends coming. Arnie and Anna were reaching out to people who drink alcohol, but they were willing to sit with them and love them, but they weren't getting drunk themselves. They were there to serve and love people. So if you understand the heart of God, you understand sometimes you're around people doing things maybe you wouldn't want to participate in, but you're willing to be there because you love those people more than you're worried about what people think of you. And so Jesus shows up there and unembarrassedly, unashamedly is hanging out with people anyone would call sinners. Tax collectors were even worse to these guys. Those were sellouts. And so they ask him, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? Now Jesus hears this, so he's going to respond. It's not the healthy who need a doctor, it's the sick. Now I need you to go and learn what this means. What a great statement by Jesus. Jesus is often called, there's actually an old hymn called Gentle Jesus, Meek and Mild, and it talks about, next week we'll probably talk about this, how he won't even, a bruised reed he won't break, how a smoldering wick he won't put out. In other words, he's very tender, he's very generous, he's very gentle, he's very kind. The only people you don't see him very kind with are religious people. He gets mad at these guys, and the reason he's mad is they should know better. It's one thing for people who don't know any better to do things they probably shouldn't do. These guys should know better. And they're worried about whether or not he's around people doing questionable things. And he's saying, you're not even loving the people you're supposed to love. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. What is Jesus actually after? He hasn't called a bunch of righteous people to sit around and say, wow, we're better than everybody else. Thank you, God. We're better than everyone else. I've called actually people who are in sin because sin produces death. Because they're bad choices, whether they're making them on purpose or it's addiction or it's just confusion, they're making choices that are hurting them and others. And I'm trying to get them out of that because it's like a sick person who needs a doctor. And so he appeals to them. This is what it really means to be someone who's following God, who has a deep relationship with God, is you're trying to call people back from where they're broken so they can get healed. Now, John's disciples show up and they ask him an interesting question. How is it? Here's what they're going to ask. How come we have to do a lot of hard stuff and it doesn't seem like your disciples have to do stuff? We and even those Pharisees over there, they fast often. They often take time away to not eat so they can focus on God or godly disciplines or godly habits. But here's your disciples. They're not fasting at all. Jesus answers him very interestingly. He says, how can you ask the guest of the bridegroom to mourn while he's here? And so he explains a principle I want us to grasp. The time will come when he'll be taken away, then they will fast. There's a timing for everything we do in following God. He's saying sometimes it's time to fast, sometimes it's time to feast. We celebrate while the bridegroom is with us. We celebrate when great things are happening. He's probably wondering, why are you all fasting when the time of healing and the time of breakthrough and the time of victory is here and you can't even feel it? He explains it further this way. No one sews a patch of unshrunk cloth on an old garment because it'll rip away. So when they get washed and then they dry, they pull away from each other. So he's saying it'll make the tear worse. Neither do people pour new wine in old wineskins. Now, I'm not like a wineskin user or an old patch cloth maker. So I'm not personally very familiar with all this stuff. But the principle is very clear. If you put these new wine into the old wineskins, it'll burst and the wine will run out and it'll be ruined. No, they put the new wine into new wineskins so that both are preserved. So here's what he's trying to say. If you're going to follow where Jesus is taking us, if you're going to follow me, Jesus says, you're going to need to change your structure. You're going to need to change your mindset. You're going to need to change your perspective. You need to change your framework of how ministry works so you can see where I'm going. Because I'm doing things very differently than how you've done them before. He goes on to make a wild statement. He says, he sees the crowd and he has compassion on them because he sees them like sheep without a shepherd. So he goes, what should we do about this? And he goes to his disciples, the harvest is truly plentiful. You may have heard this. This is one of the most often used, particularly around leadership stuff in church or why we should be motivated to help others. He says, the harvest truly is plentiful. It's the laborers that are few. There's many people out there who would be willing to have a deep relationship with God, who would be willing to come home to Jesus, who would be willing to be open to a spiritual life, but they have no laborers out there to invite them in. So God says, therefore, pray. He doesn't say, therefore, go first. He doesn't say, therefore, try to fix it yourself. He doesn't say, therefore, come up with a great plan, and then you can submit your plan to me, and if you get approval, I'll give you funding for your initiative, and then we'll see what happens. He says, let's start at the right place. Pray, because there is a Lord of the harvest. That's who God is. He's the one in charge of this whole field. All those people. The field is a picture of people's lives who need to be brought home, need to be healed, need to be set free. And he's saying, I'm the Lord of all that, and I want to send laborers out into that harvest. So he says, you guys need to pray. Now I can imagine the 12 guys are like, okay, sweet. I'm going to impress Jesus. Tonight at dinner, I'm going to be like, Lord, send laborers into the harvest. God, I pray and I declare and I decree and I prophetic and I do this and I do that. Send laborers, Lord. And so I imagine a few of them did that. And then the next one tried to top it. Yes, Lord, all the nations send laborers. Yes, Lord. And they're praying and praying. And so after dinner, Jesus calls them and says, okay, let me give you authority to drive out impure spirits and heal every sickness and disease. So he first calls them and goes, hey, if you're going to go out there and do this, you need power. So I'm going to give you authority. You're going to represent me when you go. So he gives them authority and then he sends them out. And he sends them out with very specific instructions. And that's why we start in prayer. The authority comes from God. We can only do what he says to do, go where he says to go, and say what he says to say. We can only heal the sick if he anoints us, if he releases his spirit to heal the sick, to cast out demons, to raise the dead, all the things he's going to talk about. Then he gives them specific instructions. Here's where I want you to go. I believe we have a specific God who can give us specific instructions. I don't know if you've ever experienced this, where all of a sudden you're like, man, I should text that guy. Man, I should call that friend of mine who I haven't talked to in a long time. I should see how that army buddy's doing or see how this situation is. I don't remember this guy being around for a while. Somehow it just, a person's face maybe comes to your mind. To me, that's God giving me instruction. Go to those guys. Now, he warns them, don't go to these other people. Go to the lost sheep house. In other words, you guys need to focus on your own guys right now. Proclaim this message. The kingdom of heaven has come near. Here's what I want you to do. Heal the sick. Raise the dead. Cleanse those who, which ones? The ones who have leprosy. Drive out demons. Now, all the things he just said, you cannot do. They couldn't heal the sick. None of them are doctors. Maybe Luke later, he's not around yet. Raising the dead, cleansing lepers, driving out demons. These are all things that require the supernatural power of God. And so he's saying, the only way you're going to go is you need to freely receive from me because I've prayed for you. I've released this. I've given you this authority. Now freely give it out to others. Okay, at this point, I would be super excited. If I'm John, if I'm Peter, I'm one of these guys. Okay, sweet. We got power. I want to raise a dead person. That sounds cool. Heal the sick, drive out demons, cleanse people. Okay, God's touched us. This is God. This is Jesus. He's touching us. Let's do it. And he goes, I am sending you out like sheep among wolves. Now, this is when I would stop. I don't know if you've ever seen a sheep and then seen a wolf. A sheep among wolves does not have a good chance at survival. A sheep among wolves is about to get killed. So God, what are you telling me? Why are you sending me out like sheep among wolves? If there's a harvest out there, shouldn't you send us out like soldiers Shouldn't you send us out like we're the wolves or we're the lions? Lions among wolves sounds better. I don't know. Give us something here, God. Help us. He gives us a couple more pictures. They're just as bizarre. He says, I'm sending you out like sheep among wolves. Therefore, be as shrewd as snakes. Now, everywhere else in Scripture, as far as I know, I'm pretty sure 100% of the time, snakes or serpents generally represent sin, Satan, demonic things, evil things. They're almost always the evil of the world. Here, he actually uses it as a positive. Snakes are crafty. They use subtlety. They're aware that other things might be trying to hurt them, other things might be trying to attack them, so they use camouflage, they use different techniques. They use wisdom in the world to get what they need to get done. So he's saying you need some craftiness, you need some shrewdness, but let your heart be innocent as doves. The reason doves are often used for innocence is because they're supposedly very single-eyed. They can lock onto one thing at a time, so they're completely single-focused. It's also what makes them unsafe. So if you were to be as shrewd as a dove, it wouldn't be very safe because you're just kind of very simple-minded. And he's saying, don't be simple-minded. You're going to need some wisdom in life. However, let your heart be innocent. Let it be filled with love. Let your eye be fully focused on me. Let your eye be fully focused on God so that you're not distracted by the noise around you and that your heart stays pure even as you're having to deal with a world that's full of wolves, full of challenges, yet your heart remains pure. So be on guard. You'll be handed over to local councils. You'll be flogged in the synagogues. Thanks a lot. I want to go back to the heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the leper part. I don't know about this part. You'll be brought before governors and kings as witnesses to them and to the Gentile. He doesn't mean, by the way, that you'll get to go to nice parties with kings and ambassadors. He's saying you'll be brought before them like as a prisoner, okay? But when they arrest you, do not worry about what to say or how to say it. That seems like hard advice to take. Hey, you might get thrown in jail and they might, you know, take you to court to want to kill you, but don't worry about it. Thanks a lot. That sounds easy. How? Because I'll give you what to say at that time, for it will not be you speaking, but the Spirit of your Father speaking through you. And that's really the key to everything we've heard. Who are the people Jesus sends? He gives them of his Spirit of love that's single-minded, his Spirit of wisdom that's crafty in difficult situations and has wisdom that goes beyond natural resources. He gives you his Spirit that's power and love in the midst of a crooked generation. He's giving us that Spirit to go. But he warns us, a student is not above his master or teacher, and a servant not above his master. It's enough for students to be like their teachers, servants to be like their masters. If they've called me Beelzebub, that's the Lord of the flies, literally, but it's kind of like a prince or king in the demonic world, how much more the members of the household? So he's warning you, people are going to curse you, man. I don't know if you've ever really tried to help somebody. A lot of times your blessing will be called a curse. And so what you have to be prepared for is to walk in peace and to walk in love in your own heart and remember why you're doing what you're doing. He says, do not be afraid of those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather, be afraid of the one who can destroy both soul and body in hell. In other words, you better look to honor God, not worry about what anybody else is thinking. I had an interesting conversation with someone really close to me where we weren't eye to eye on a particular thing and we were wrestling through this particular issue. And finally, the person looked at me and went, I'm just trying to do what I really believe God told me to do. At that point, I had to back up and realize maybe I'm pressing something that's because if it's forcing them to wonder whether they're really honoring God or not, we're in the wrong place. We better back up and hear from God. And so here's the reality. It's not a fear that's like a terrifying fear. It's the deepest place in my heart. I don't want to disappoint God more than I care about what you might do to me. Now, he gives us an encouragement because he's been giving us some hard words. If you've been paying attention, this has been a hard chapter to hear about challenges that come from following God. He brings up a little sparrow and he says, are not two sparrows sold for a penny? Yet not one of them will fall to the ground outside your Father's care. In other words, he's recognizing all these guys, even though they're sold for pennies. And even the very hairs on your head are numbered. As mine decrease, I'm not as aware of the number. It's becoming easier to count, but I still don't know what the number is. Don't be afraid. You are worth much more than many sparrows. Sometimes we forget God really does care about us. He really does value you, and he really does want to see great things for your life. This is the God we serve. So he's saying, don't worry. I know what's best for you, and I'm going to make sure you're cared for. However, there's more challenge to come. Anyone who loves their father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Anyone who loves their son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Boy, this is pushing things. He's getting down to the core of what comes first in your life. The only way this following Jesus thing works, and this will be tested at some point, is he really the first place? Is he really King of Kings and Lord of Lords? He's the most important of everything in my life. Whoever does not take up their cross and follow him is not worthy of him. Whoever finds their life will lose it, and whoever loses their life for my sake will find it. You know, we're about to do our first freedom class this year, and it's really all about finding life and fullness of life in Jesus. One of the things that's funny is Jesus on one hand promises abundant full life, and then on the other hand says, now the way to get that abundant full life is lose your life. Because when you're living for self, when you're living for someone else that's a lesser thing than God, you'll always be limited in the fullness you can enjoy life. But when you live fully for God who is life, your life comes alive. So he says, if you're willing to give me your life, you'll find an abundance of life in that relationship with me. Here he challenges us to do that again. Then he encourages us, I'm watching and I care. Every time you do anything for me, I see it and I value it. He says, whoever welcomes a prophet as a prophet will receive a prophet's reward. Whoever welcomes a righteous person as a righteous person will receive a righteous person's reward. He's saying, look, if you help somebody, I'm going to see it, I'm going to bless it, I'm going to reward it. Anyone who gives even a cup of cold water to one of the little ones who is my disciple, truly I tell you, that person will certainly not lose their reward. That encourages me. God sees the little things you do in his name. God sees when you care about someone nobody else is caring for. So he's making a challenge, a difficult, challenging statement to say following him isn't easy. But he's also encouraging us that it's worth every single part of that challenge. So let's summarize what we've learned today. Jesus talks about discipleship in this way. He says, look, it's not about the crowd. Sometimes I have to move away from these people. You know, they were doing all these miracles. They're like, wow, this is cool. Look at all these miracles. But he keeps pulling them away to pray. Pulling them away to hear from God and the Father, to pull them away to learn who God's called them to be so that they can go out again. It's not going to be about comfort. Sometimes you're going to be sheep among wolves. Sometimes you're going to have to be as shrewd as serpents, sometimes as innocent as doves, and you're going to have to figure out when and how to do that. It's also not about control. You'll be taken places you didn't want to go. You'll have to do things you'd prefer not to do. And yet God will be in the midst of it, giving you wisdom, giving you protection, giving you life, giving you power, giving you purpose in the midst of all that. So Jesus will call us. He'll call the unlikely person. He looks at the tax office and calls that guy instead of the church sometimes. He calls the unliked person. Can you imagine there was a guy named Simon the Zealot and Matthew? Zealot, they were wanting to fight and fight against Rome and have an uprising and have a revolution. And here's Matthew, who's a sellout. I can't imagine those dudes at dinner talking to one another. They're probably not best friends. And yet the people that would look down on one another would actually be caused by Jesus to be brought into this thing called community so that they can learn to love one another. And even the unclean, he says, man, these guys hangs out with sinners and tax collectors. And Jesus understands, and he calls us to do this same thing. You need to go to the places that are ugly. You need to go to the places that are broken because that's where people need the most help. Go help. Go serve. How? Start in prayer. Without the Spirit of God moving us, we have very little authority, very little power, very little ability to change anything. So we start going, God, change us first. God, fill us with your power. God, fill us with your grace. Fill us with your purpose. Fill us with your wisdom. And more maybe than anything, fill us with your love for others and your compassion for others. So that's what drives us to this mission field. As we receive his compassion and love, he gives us authority and power to go heal the sick, to go cleanse the leper, to go raise the dead, to see demons cast out. That's the God we serve. And he gives us his divine perspective. And I think that's the hugest part because sometimes you'll be in prison and you're actually winning in life. You know, we were talking about this recently. How come some people, when they serve God, it seems like things in their life get worse? Well, to the world, it might be worse, but to God, you might be doing something that's creating eternal value for you, your children, and your children's children. So we trust God to lead us in every step of the journey. We're going to close our time and kind of answer one of the questions, why? Why is it worth it to do all this? And that's why I love when we take communion together, we take the bread and the cup, because we're reminding ourselves we have a God who loved us enough to come to earth and live all the things he's asking us to live, to die the death that we deserve to die, to raise from the dead 3 days later, to show he had conquered death, he had conquered hell, conquered our sin, conquered our fear, and could offer us new life. As we take the bread, we're reminded his body broken, our bodies made whole. As we take the cup, we're reminded his blood shed, our sins forgiven, our new life with him started. And so we just want you to take that in your own time, in your home, or as a family, or if you're meeting as a small group. God bless you. Have a great week and enjoy God this week.
Thank you for listening to the Every Nation Singapore podcast. We hope you've been blessed by today's message. For more information, visit everynation.org.sg.